So joining us now, one of our favorites, OMB director, Mick Mulvaney, erstwhile Freedom Caucus member. Is that going to be in your obituary, Mick? You know, the
I'm proud of that. What are you talking about?
I'm just kidding. Of course you're proud of it. How you doing? We've been enjoying you, watching you on all the shows, and we're like, we feel like we knew you when.
It's been fun, and it's been different than being in Congress, that's for sure. It's a tremendous job in a great administration. I've loved working with the president, who's just been, 100 miles an hour all the time. And I think we worked, OMB worked 29 days in a row at one point. I was here 6 consecutive Sundays. So it's it is all work all the time, and I couldn't be happier.
Let's talk about that concern that Norquist and others have with tying what has been a very difficult health care repeal and replace effort to infrastructure in a win-to-win Democrat votes. I've heard from my sources on Capitol Hill that a lot of Republicans don't like the infrastructure because, you know, again, how are we going to pay for it? And then the Democrats aren't going to support a really good health and healthcare repeal anyway. So why would you tie the two together?
Yeah, and I think a couple different things on that. First of all, obviously the infrastructure plan is not finished. So to my Republican friends who are worried about adding dramatically to the deficit, we are looking at ways to leverage the government spending so it keeps the deficit spending to a minimum. I think that you'll see the ratio. Well, I won't give away because we're working right now on the budget, but we are very much aware of the sensitivities towards adding to the deficit for infrastructure. But to the point about tying the two, I think what the part you're overlooking is the president's comment about phase two. And what that is not the health care repeal bill that we're talking about now. That's phase one. The phase two is the stuff that is not reconcilable under the Senate rules. And I know I just put half the audience to sleep, but there's only so much of Obamacare you can get rid of through the Senate reconciliation rules, keeping in mind the Senate passed Obamacare while they had 60 votes in the Senate for parts of it. And then they passed other parts with 50 votes after Scott Brown won that special election up in Massachusetts back in 2010. We cannot repeal all of Obamacare with the same 50-vote threshold.
Now, we've been through this before with Ryan on the show.
Yeah, okay, so that's great.
But how does that have to do with the infrastructure spending in the tax reform bill?
Here's why. I'll tie it to infrastructure. Is that there's other things the president wants to do. The best example is the interstate sales. Sales across state lines, a big part of his campaign. That cannot be passed with 50 votes. It needs 60. So what the president, I think, is simply thinking about and talking about in that clip is, okay, what can I add to that to attract the necessary 8 or 10 or 12 Democrats I'm going to need to pass those other pieces of the phase two of the health care bill? So this doesn't deal with the major bill that's going through the House right now that we tried to have a vote on a couple weeks ago. This is part of the next stage down the road. There's other ways to do it. There's other things you could talk about to work about with the Democrats to try and pick up some support for the phase two of health care. So it's important, I think, not to commingle the two.
The April 29th, first 100 days, that's kind of a media creation, but nevertheless, it's been used for, you know, since I've been in Washington, to get some sense about how a presidency is going. What can we expect by April 29th beyond the executive action we've seen, which is very positive on the deregulatory front, and the, of course, Gorsuch getting on the Supreme Court? Both of those are very positive. Yeah. But what else can we expect of those big agenda items that Donald Trump so successfully campaigned on?
Yeah, I think you probably, there's a better than average chance you'll see the House act on the Obamacare repeal by the end of April. You're going to see the government funded in a way that does preserve the president's priorities. We can talk, if you want to, about the additional money he wants for defense, he wants for border security, he wants for law enforcement. I thought Jeff Sessions has done some great work this week. So he's following through on his promises on immigration. We're also trying to figure out a way to reduce spending at other places. You just saw this week, as a matter of fact, today, we're unveiling our guidance on the government restructuring. So the president has started the wheels turning to completely rebuilding the executive branch of government from the ground up, from a clean sheet of paper. That's the draining the swamp part. That's where that campaign rhetoric becomes real. I want to drain the swamp, which means that we are going to fix a broken structure of government in Washington, D.C. So there's a lot of things that I think we followed through on. Have we finished tax repeal? No. Have we finished infrastructure? No. I don't think anybody everybody really thought you were going to do health care tax reform and...
Well, the president said you could get a lot of it done, Director Mulvaney, in the first 100 days. He campaigned on it. What are you talking about? He argued that he could get a lot of this stuff done. So what happened between the time we were campaigning and April 12th?
That's a great question. Here's the answer, because I think maybe I have a unique perspective on that. I think the House, especially, was more broken than anybody realized, including me. I didn't realize the way the health care thing was supposed to shake out, and what I told the president the way I thought it would go was that the Freedom Caucus would push to try and make the bill better in their eyes, more conservative in their eyes, and then they would deliver the votes necessary to get it across the finish line at the end. And that is how it played out until the very end. And when I started talking to my friends about why that was and what was different and why did I miss this so badly, I think there's some issues between members of the House and issues between various groups in the House. There's some trust issues with leadership. There's some trust issues
for good
with
reason.
Various members that they have to work out. And the president can't fix that.
Well,
and
I get that. But Director Mulvaney, I get that. But you guys have a legislative affairs guy, Rick Dearborn, who was chief of staff to Sessions. And yet you have all these people in the West Wing are supposedly, I'm not blaming everything on Steve Bannon like all these other people do for their own convenience. You have Kushner, you have Bannon, you got Gary Cohn, who's supposedly the smartest guy ever because he was Goldman Sachs. And then everything's kicked over to Ryan, and then it all falls to pieces toward the end. And people are like, well, what just happened? Well, I mean, this is why the smart people were brought in.
I don't know what that means, kicked over to Ryan.
Ryan had the quarterback role in this, did he not? Ryan had the quarterback role on health care.
He's supposed to. He's the Speaker of the House. I mean,
he didn't win the presidency, though, on the campaign pledge. He didn't win the Better Way didn't win the presidency. Last time I checked, he wouldn't campaign with Donald Trump in October. You didn't pull your support from Trump, Congressman Mulvaney,
right.
Now Director Mulvaney. But Paul Ryan did.
Are we disagreeing with each other?
Yeah.
Right. So, but I guess I don't understand your point, is that the president can't fix what's broken in the House. The House has to fix that, and I think that's what we learned during healthcare. Keep in mind, one person you didn't mention is one of the most highly regarded members of the House when I was there, Mike Pence, also involved, also wasn't able to heal those wounds in the House. That's how deep they go. The House has got problems they need to fix, and the White House can't fix them for them.
Right,
and
but
that's
my
we don't
my
have
point,
the
I don't
first 100 days.
Yeah, I don't think we disagree. My point is that early on, Ryan, Paul Ryan knows the Freedom Caucus. You know, threatening the Freedom Caucus, either in tweets or other comment. I mean, the idea that you're going to move Mark Meadows when he's reelected by like 30% or whatever it was, he's not going to move Mark Meadows. You got to know your caucus. In the West Wing, with its legislative director and outreach, has to be working hand in glove with Ryan, saying, okay, who are these people? What do they want? Like, I mean, so I get it. I mean,
finish the thought. Finish the what? Who are these people and what do they want? And if what they want is something we can't give them, if what they want is trust in the Speaker of the House,
well, they wanted a full repeal of Obamacare. They wanted a full repeal of Obamacare, which is what you said you wanted when you were in there, right?
Yeah, we did. We gave them a full repeal of Obamacare. That's not.
Oh, you still have the mandates in there.
We gave them actually.
Come on. You still have the mandates.
We gave them more of a repeal from Obamacare than they had in the 2015.
Okay, we went from full repeal to more of a repeal. But I know. Look, you can't get everything you want, and you're right about that. I'm badgering, and you're like, you're one of the great guys in there, and I'm not trying to badger you on this at all.
Oh, I like it. I don't mind.
No, but I think it. In the end, we all want this administration to be successful. And part of what has to happen to be successful is knowing the players on the chessboard. And it. Mike Pence knows it.
The House needs a win. The House does need to figure out a way to get this health care bill passed. And I think one thing the president has talked about is that if the House can't work out health care, then there's unlikely to be able to work out tax reform and infrastructure. If they're that broken over there, then they will end up being an impediment to the president's administration and his agenda for the whole 2 years of this Congress. So they do need to get that worked out. And if there's stuff the White House can do to help that, that's great. But Rick Dearborn in Legislative Affairs is not going to solve that problem for the House.
Right. I think what probably also, and I remember this from the Reagan years, when your popularity is high, when you have good numbers and things are going well from the outset, you have a lot more leverage against Congress. And when you're going in and your numbers have gone down a little bit, you have less leverage because they're like, what are you going to do? Your numbers are cratering. My numbers are actually, in my district are pretty good. So I think just saying Congress is broken, well, I mean, pretty much everything seems broken to a lot of people out in the country. So I just think in the end, just passing it off and throwing the hot potato over there, you guys are going to sink or swim together. I mean, if it turns out that the Freedom Caucus is really the biggest problem in the House, I mean, I don't think so. I mean, I don't think you were the biggest problem when
you were there. No, no, no. Keep in mind, let me make one thing perfectly clear. I mean, half of the Freedom Caucus supported the bill.
Yep.
Our last whip count that we have 36 no's, half of which were in the Freedom Caucus and half of which were not. So I don't think it's fair to say the Freedom Caucus was the only impediment. That's why I was trying to say that there's issues between the various groups and between various members. That's not to say that the only issue over there is the Freedom Caucus. We had as many moderates who opposed this bill for different reasons as we did conservatives.
So did the White House, does the White House share any of the blame in this going down the way it did? Or none?
I think I probably share some of the blame in not knowing it, because I was the most recently there, and I just did not see that. I got along with folks when I was there. Remember, I'm a founding member of the Freedom Caucus, and the whole idea was that we were supposed to be the folks who pushed and pushed and pushed, but at the end actually got good stuff across the finish line. And something happened when I left from that group, and I'm not sure what that was. I also didn't realize that the moderates were so opposed to this kind of stuff. And that stunned me as well, that they have so many moderates opposing the health care bill. So, no, I missed a couple things, and I told the president that, and that's my fault. But we're going to get it right, and I think the House is moving in the right direction.
Okay.
I've talked to a bunch of members from across the spectrum the last couple of days, and it seems like they're making some progress.
Good stuff. The lifting of the federal hiring freeze, when you see that headline, it sounds bad. It sounds bad to be like, wait a second, they're not going to let government grow. But that's part of what you're doing to reshape hiring where it needs to be done. And like Jeff Sessions just told us about the new immigration judges. You guys are reshaping the executive branch. Explain that in terms that people can really understand. But you have to lift the freeze on federal firing in order to make the government more efficient.
Yeah, and that's the way it works. Is we put across the board freeze when the first day Mr. Trump was in office.
Yep.
But that obviously doesn't serve us very well, because there's places where we do want to hire more people, such as border agents and judges and folks to deal with law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
And there's other places where we want to actually reduce, not go beyond just a freeze, for example, at the EPA. So what we did today is got rid of that across-the-board freeze and replaced it with the actual strategy, which is, okay, consistent with our budget, we're going to hire more people over here, where the president has priorities to actually do more, like on law enforcement, and we're going to fire a lot of people over there where the president doesn't see any priorities. And that's a smart move. It's the right move at the right time. It's what a business would do. And I think the president's been very pleased with the way it's rolled out.
The reported tensions in the West Wing, I mean, you're there all the time. The president won Pennsylvania and Ohio and Michigan on a populist, more economically nationalist agenda. America first, fix this infrastructure and bridges and get America working again. Do you believe the Trump agenda, as he campaigned on it, is imperiled if Steve Bannon is not in the White House and that part of the that representation of that that agenda is gone?
Yeah, a couple of things. First of all, I think a lot of that tension is misreported, blown out of proportion. I am there every single day, and I just haven't seen it. In fact, the team works probably better than I expected, given the fact that not a lot of these folks knew each other before they were here. They haven't worked together very long. The team functions extraordinarily well, and I've never seen a single one of these supposed outbursts or breakdowns or whatever that the media reports. Reince gets along with Bannon. Bannon gets along with Jared. I just don't see it. But to answer your other question, which is if Steve Bannon is gone, does it imperil the president's populism? No, because the president's populism is real. This is really who he is, and I've seen the examples of that already as I've walked through budget proposals with him, tax reform proposals I've seen him talk about. His populism is real. It's
great.
Not something that Steve Bannon forced on him. So the president, Steve Bannon's a great member of the team, and I think he should stay. I haven't heard anything to the contrary within the White House. I obviously read about it in the media. But the bottom line is the president makes the policy around here, and we just help him get it done.
Mick Mulvaney, it's so great to catch up with you, and we're just so delighted you're on this team, and thank you so much for what you're doing and explaining all this to our listeners coast to coast. Thank you so much, and happy Easter to you.
To you as well. Thanks very much.
All right, you take care. Don't go away.
The Laura Ingraham Show.